Yes, hello everyone, welcome back to Free Kick for another 2026 AFLW Fantasy Preview. Today I have resident Hawthorn expert to talk all things Hawthorn, Hawks, Jono. How are you?
Oh, very, very good, thanks, Liam. I'm excited that I get to be on this half of the podcast because in recent seasons I've been doing the interviews. So it's good to have a chance to actually talk about the Hawks and not just have to bite your ear off all preseason.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure we've relayed all the best information that you've been funneling our way. Now, if you'd come on last year, you would have got to give us some of the most positive information about the Hawks. Last year, though, was a consolidating season, but it probably wasn't one of improvement.
No. I think it was probably one of the least convincing top four finishes that the Hawks have had. And look, we did back up the rise to finish top four again, so I really appreciated that. And we did it through a lot of injuries, you know, pretty key players like Jazz Fleming was out for a few weeks, Emily Bates, Lucy Wales, Eileen Gilroy, Brady Hipwell was out for half the season. Like, we did it with a lot of important players missing. So on the one hand, when you look at some of those big wins over the Lions, over Carlton, over St Kilda, the other top eight teams that we had to be in the mix with, I think there was a lot to be excited about. On the other hand, the end of the season was just too familiar. It's back-to-back seasons now. The Hawks have gone out with straight set final exits. And that's going to frustrate fans, the coach, the team. It's definitely a big challenge that the Hawks have got to fix. They were one of the earlier adopters of that fast transition game that a lot of the AFLW teams are using now. And I guess it's probably frustrating that other teams are now doing it arguably better. And again, that inaccuracy in front of goal was a big issue in both final series.
Yeah, and I also think it's worthwhile noting that it, as much as, you know, in pre-rule changes to speed up the gameplay in the AFLW, Hawthorn were one of the pioneers, as you said. Last season, I'd say they actually almost regressed in their speed of ball movement, in their speed of transition. And I don't know about you, but I saw a few players struggle more with the new holding the ball rules than Emily Bates, at least in the first half of the season, who regularly 2-3 times a game was getting done for holding the ball under the new rules. Hopefully, new offseason, new appreciation, it'll improve. But it was certainly a surprise to see Hawthorn struggle to adapt, even if they did make top four, to the new game style.
Yeah. No, absolutely no doubt. And I do think part of the issue of being an early adopter is that when it came to the Hawks, every team could plan and go, well, this is the way they move the ball quickly and sort of plan for how to stop that. And also we talked about Jazz Fleming and Eileen Gilroy being big parts of that game. I think their speed, their ability to kick long over the top or break lines through, these defensive walls that get set up, when they're out of the side, we look a very, very different team.
Well, speaking of players out of the side, let's jump across to who has left the Hawthorn list, including Eileen Gilroy.
Well, yeah, absolutely. A lot of big outs this season. So Eileen Gilroy retiring was a very, very big one. We've also had a number of players delisted. Rebecca Clotty, Nat Exon, who was brought in to replace Rebecca Clotty halfway through last season. Christy Stratton, who was one of the early stars for the Hawks. And Ainsley Kemp, who I have to say, one of the harshest delistings I've ever seen because she was doing very, very well. Does her ACL at the start of last season and then suddenly delisted from the side. But the big ones are the trades that went out. We lost Sophie Butterworth to St Kilda, but Tilly Lucas-Rodd to the Giants. And their departure as our primary meters gained player is absolutely going to be difficult to replace, as well as, of course, the preseason injury we've just seen to Emily Everest, who's done her ACL and going to be missing the 2026 season, sadly.
Yeah, and look, I think we're going to have a lot of a conversation about the meters gained that need to come in, given the names that you've mentioned out. Before we get to those, though, let's have a look. Give us a rundown on the draft haul for the Hawks.
Yeah, so the Hawks traded away a little bit of their top picks just with the hope of bringing in some established talent. So our first pick in the draft was Hannah Looney at pick 51, who came across from Ireland but's come through the draft. So definitely a very late pick to start us off there. My idea also came in as a father-daughter pick at pick 57. But yeah, the trade-ins that we saw. So we picked up Jackie Depay from the Gold Coast Suns, who is so needed. I think we desperately needed a foil for Anya McDonough down front. So she's going to be fantastic. And then Neve Martin's come across from the North Melbourne Premiers. So they're very much hopefully going to be a replacement long-term for Eileen Gilroy, although very, very big boots to fill there. Then in the preseason draft, picked up Michaela Antony, as well as a replacement player for Emily Everest in Poppy Stockwell, who used to play for the Fremantle side.
It's going to be a fascinating little start to the season, particularly with the addition of Jack Depay. But before we get to talk about what this season is going to look like, let's start the interview. We had Jenna Richardson sit down virtually with co-host Willow for a fascinating conversation. Let's throw to that now.
We are very, very lucky to be joined by Star Hawks defender Jenna Richardson today. So last season, another great year for the Hawks, another top four finish, though I will ask the awkward question first, which is you did go out in straight sets for the second year in a row. Is that something that the group's addressed, or is it more just, you know, you trust the process and hopefully move on this year and it'll all be fine?
Yeah, no, definitely something we have addressed. As Maury would say from the men's team, the elephant under the carpet, but we did talk about, yeah, the elephant in the room and address that that's been happening. We don't shy away from that, but yeah, we are definitely wanting to go one better or four better for the ultimate goal. But yeah, everything we do comes back to performing in finals.
Yeah, of course. And I think it would be remiss to not say that, you know, injuries hit pretty hard last year. You struggled for continuity in the team, but something else that I thought was quite interesting was the fact that there was a lot of goal inaccuracy. And I know Daniel Webster talked about that after the finals in particular. I got to ask, in the first few weeks of preseason, has it been mostly goal-kicking practice?
Well, we actually got a new development coach in, Mark Williams, Choco.
Yes.
So he's been fantastic working on goal-kicking. There definitely has been a lot. We haven't made it a big focus. It's just important as a lot of our other aspects of our game. But, yeah, with the new facilities here, there's a big shed, so lots more goal kicking and just refining that technique with Chocker and the other coaches.
Very nice. And as a star goal kicker yourself, I'm guessing you've been doing a lot of the goal kicking work.
I do find it fun, even though I'm an offender. So I've been doing a few set shots too, but yeah.
Very good. Well, starting with yourself, you've become one of the best defenders in the competition. You lost just 4% of your one-on-one contests last year and one of the best interceptors. Can you give us a little bit of insight into your game and how you've developed as a player over the past few seasons?
Yeah, I think I've had a lovely transition into AFLW in terms of already being connected to the club through Box Hill and joining the first Hawthorn team with a fair few teammates I was familiar with. So I think the support that I've been given by the senior players back then and the staff has been amazing and has definitely helped me improve. I've had so many great people to lean on, to go to for advice and even just provide me with some confidence to play at this level and to play on some amazing forwards and be involved in so many contests. So, yeah, I think there'd be so many people that have contributed to my journey, but I'm just as grateful for each of them.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. And there will be a bit of a reshuffle in the back line this year. You've lost, of course, Tilly Lucas-Rod. They've headed to the Giants, and Emily Everest, unfortunately, has gone down with an ACL injury. Has there been any talk into how those holes will be fixed at this stage of the preseason?
Yeah, well, definitely two key members of our back line last year that I loved playing with and that were so important for our defence. Tilly, obviously, we've had more time to think about shuffling and getting that position sorted. I think there's a lot of people that could play that position, the more attacking and running halfback. I know a lot of our mids could, and I think it's an exciting look that there's so many options. Give Daniel a bit of a headache come selection time. But yeah, Sherpa, or Emily Everest, Sherpa as we call her.
Yes.
Yeah, still processing that emotionally. It's been really devastating for everyone who knows her and plays with her, but I think the good thing is we're quite flexible, and as a backline, we are undersized a lot of the time. So I think we're used to having to play on taller forwards, so people will be up for the challenge. But, yeah, Shep will do all she can to support and then help the transition. So I think there are a few options, which is always a good thing.
Something else that I'm actually quite interested in terms of the backline is that those two players actually took almost the entirety of a team's kickouts last year. Has that been something that's been sort of put on the table for someone to take the responsibility of going forward?
Yeah, we actually touched on that last week, and I think the good thing is we'd be confident with any of them taking it, any defenders. Anyone who wants that extra stat can go take it. So I think, yeah, pretty much most of the tall and like hybrid defenders we'd be confident with taking it. So we haven't set one set person, which I guess is just good to be flexible.
Nice. And you did mention you do get that free extra status, something you'd be interested in jumping and grabbing.
Yeah, I don't think it will be me taking them, but yeah.
Yeah, you're probably just happy being the star defender regardless. You mentioned the versatility, and that's something that has obviously been very evident with the Hawks, and a player that we know is very versatile is Jazz Fleming, a favorite of ours here. Very, very consistent player, but can, as you say, play everywhere. She really looks like it could become one of the absolute best if she's not there already. How's her preseason tracking? And has she sort of got a locked in role at this stage? Because we know she did play a lot of time, both in the midfield and forward of the ball last year.
Yeah, Jazz is amazing, and it's incredible to watch her like nearly every day out on the park. She does everything to a T and controls all the controllables. So yeah, her speed, as you'd know, her being one of your favourites, is next level in the way she can change a game. So I think Daniel's been very open to different positions and just learning the game. Doesn't necessarily mean people might play there, but I would expect to see Jazz play similar to last year. I think she's ready to take that next step as well, which is really exciting for us.
That's super exciting to hear. And speaking of sort of new players as well, you've lost a star Irish forward in Eileen Gilroy, who retired, but you've gained a new one in Neve Martin, who's come back from Ireland after her studies last season. What's she brought to the team so far, and how's she tracking this preseason?
Yeah, Neve is incredible. I'm coming from North, and I will acknowledge like missing Gilly first is sad for us both on and off the field, but we all wish her the best over in Ireland. But she's a very hard shoe to fill with Gilly and that big boot of hers. But Neve's been really good. She's really fast, just great even in the change rooms, like just getting around the girls and fun teammate. But, yeah, she's a workhorse and just so willing to learn our structures and everything that's different. So I'm really excited to watch and see what she can bring. And we have another Irish, Hannah Looney, who's new to the game. So I think, sky's the limit for her as well. So it should be really exciting.
That's absolutely fantastic to hear. And I guess in the last two seasons, you've had an Irish forward make the All-Australian team, Gilroy, and then, of course, Anya McDonald last season. I guess is Neve Martin going to become the third in a row this year?
I hope so. And then I hope Anya stays in it too. So we'll just add another one.
Very nice. You can also throw Hannah Looney in there straight off the drafting, I think. The other player that you have brought into that forward line is Jack DePuy, a player who we have previously interviewed for the podcast, who is a favourite of ours as well. A very different sort of player to a lot of the other players on the list, brings a lot of experience and leadership. How's her addition to the group going, and how's she fitted in with the group in general?
Yeah, Jack's fit in exceptionally well. I think you nailed it there with her experience and leadership. She's just willing to make everyone better on the track, and she also lifts the standards that we have. I think just personally, like getting to defend someone of a forward like her, she's a lot of a stronger body. So I think that's been really good for us defenders to have that at training, teach us new things and just be faced with different kind of forwards. But she'll also give us tips or feedback on different things. And I know she's doing the same with the forwards. So I think, it's just only going to help us grow, and her leadership off the field as well. I think the first week she was in here, she's talking to all the staff upstairs in admin. So she's trying to improve the club in every way that she can. So, yeah, we're so lucky to have her on and off the field.
No, that's incredible to hear. And I guess you sort of mentioned there, but it must be great for you to get to play on another, really tall, really strong key forward. I'm guessing that's a big part of, you know, making the team better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just the last player that I just wanted to touch on, Lucy Wales, who we know is an absolute star of the game, had a bit of an injury interrupted season last year, but really looks set to push into that upper tier of rucks in the competition. I'm hoping to hear that she's injury-free this season. How's she going so far?
Yeah, Penny has picked up exactly where she left off, or even improving. Lucy, sorry. Yeah, we call her Penny. But, yeah, I think she was already one of the top players last year before her injury. So I think she's not going to have missed a beat, and she's so crucial to our lineup. So, yeah, so happy to have her back out there, and she's just sometimes looks like an extra midfielder who's a bit taller. So her ability to do different things across the ground, and like personally, I always see how helpful she is with us in defense. Like, she runs both ways. So yeah, I'm expecting great things for her again.
Yeah, you really nailed it there, because one of the things I thought was super interesting was behind yourself, she was actually the second best intercept player for the Hawks last year, which was really fantastic. The last question I do have for you from a team point of view is one that I understand you may not be able to answer fully, but I'm still going to ask, which is Daniel Webster was one of the key coaches that started sort of the fast ball movement, the aggressive ball movement. And last season, a lot of other teams also sort of started playing that game style. Was that something you as a team noticed and talked about? And was it something you sort of consciously tried to stay ahead of, or were you more trusting your own process?
I think we were trusting our own process. It's better for the game if all teams are improving as well, but we just know we want to be better than every team. So we have to keep improving as well. And we're not going to shy away from the plan we have in place or the structure we're learning. And Daniel's so big on that as well, just backing our own process. And we put a lot of work into it. So it's, yeah, just being able to perform for four quarters as well. And I know, as you mentioned already at the start, we did have an injury-riddled season to a lot of key players last year. But I think the positive from that is we could still bank some wins, obviously not in finals, but we got experience for different players as well. So I think all of that should help us go into this season pretty prepared.
Yeah, I think it's obviously going to be another exciting season for the Hawks. So we might leave it there, but we do have one final question after the final question. One final question that we do like to ask all of our interview players, which is, which player has really caught the eye so far this preseason, and who do you think set for a really big breakout in the upcoming season?
Great question. I think the breakout player, I'm going to say Mackenzie Eardley.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to be my breakout player for the Hawks this year. And those who've really caught the eye, I would say Hayley McLaughlin.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe both breakout players then.
Both breakout players. Sounds fantastic. Two very different players as well, which is quite interesting. Jen Richardson, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time, and good luck for the season ahead.
And thanks for having me on the show, Willow.
Thank you.
Great conversation, Jono. First up, the chat about kick-ins was what fascinated me most. I wondered if you were the same.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I feel like there was two halves to that conversation. The first being like, well, anyone could take them. And then the second one being,
not me.
But I'm definitely not going to take them, because I feel like there's probably an approved list and Jenna Richardson's not on it with her kicking. So that's certainly going to be an interesting one to replace. We're going to get into that a bit later, I think.
It surprised me, because I thought Jenna Richardson was a pretty solid kick, and I don't know how many defenders I can say that for at Hawthorn this season, but before we go defenders, give us your most relevant player this year for the Hawks, who is not in defence.
Yes. Now, our number one player for 2026 is going to be M1 Emily Bates. Big fan of Emily Bates, the captain of the Hawks football side. She had a very, very frustrating 2025 season. As you mentioned earlier, she was the poster child for the holding the ball rulings gone crazy. I think against Carlton in round two, she had 6 free kicks against, and I'm pretty sure from memory, at least 4 of them were holding the balls against. It's absolutely costing her some of her early scores, pushing up into those 90s. And later in the season, she ended up injuring her AC joint, and she missed quite a few games in the back half of the season. So definitely not the ideal 2026, but it's pretty clear from the practice games that she has found full fitness again, And I've been really liking what I've been seeing on the track this preseason, not just in the practice match where she top scored, but also in some of the match sims. She is priced at just 73. So you look at the two seasons before that at the Hawks that she had, she averaged 89 and 93. She's only 30 years old, which I feel like in the AFLW world is well before you reach, you know, the part where you decline. I mean, look at what Emma Carney's been doing for bloody years now. And, you know, a former best and fairest winner. I think she really is someone that could easily put the 20 points that she lost last season back onto her score and average in the 90s again.
You reckon it's 90s? Because that was going to be my question. 86 average in the season prior, but obviously 90s in the past. In this midfield group with Em Bates and Jazz Fleming, is she capable of 90s again? Or is she going to be an 80s, a mid-80s average? Because we didn't see a ceiling in any game from Bates last year. And funnily enough, her highest score of the year was the game where she gave away six frees against Carlton in round two.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think last year we were struggling in a lot of different areas. So, you know, we're talking about not just the frees against, but also just the fact that there was a lot less support in the midfield alongside her. So in that first half of the season where she played the majority of her football, missing the back half, that's when Jazz Fleming was out of the side. And so really it was on, you know, a very limited group to try and make this ball move up the field. That was also part of the season that Eileen Gilroy missed. I think a lot of attention would have gone into stopping that core clearance game that the Hawks were doing, because that was sort of the main thing we had left. So I'm really confident that she's going to go over 85 and she's going to go less than 95. That's sort of the banding that I see. I think an 85 is probably not worth the pick, and a 95 is a guaranteed slam dunk pick. So I don't know. I'm really hoping that it creeps over 90, but it's going to be at least 10 points upside is how I see this.
That is extremely understandable. My only question then is, we've got at that kind of price, how far off are we? Well, you could pick a forward in your midfield. So Ellie Blackburn.
Mm-hmm.
Is a similar-ish price. If you had to pick between the pair of them, who are you putting in at, let's say, M5 or M6? Bates or Blackburn?
Yeah, that's a good question, because if I'm picking them in my midfield, I'm picking Bates. But if I'm picking one generally in their preferred position, I'm taking Blackburn. It's a close call there.
It's certainly going to be an interesting one. Throw me to your second most relevant player for the Hawks.
Yes. So we heard Jenna Richardson there talking about the halfback trials that they've been doing with some midfielders running back there. And I think the one that I'm probably most interested in is Lavinia Cox. So we talked about the departure of Tilly Lucas-Rodd and how she led the Hawks for meters gained last season. She was also in a year that they struggled to move the ball on the outside, probably their most prominent uncontested ball mover. So I think she had the majority of her disposals on the outside last season. I think Lavinia Cox is probably going to be one that the Hawks are going to use across halfback in the early part of the season. She was a first-round pick from the 2024 National Draft. And, I mean, you see the talent that came from that draft ahead of her. You know, Centra, Harris, Fish, Painter, Schultz, Sophie McKay. Like, it's an incredible draft. And the question is, well, how deep does it run? And Cox was drafted because she is highly athletic. She's quick. She's agile. She's got elite endurance. Her pressure and her composure are really strong suits of hers. Her kicking is probably an issue. It's not the greatest of disposal back there, but that's something we used to say about Lucas-Rodd. You know, that's I don't think that's stopped the Hawks before. I think they're back in their ability to coach that to improve. In her first season, she only played the three games. So she averaged 19.7, which is pretty, pretty poor. Had some injury troubles. I think she had some ankle soreness that eventually developed into a stress fracture once they found out. So that definitely put an end to her season early. But they're behind her now. She's not necessarily a known fantasy junior either, but I think she's going to have a role which is very promising. She's only 200K as a forward. So she's probably going to have some of the better job security that you're going to see for a rookie forward at the 200K mark. And, you know, another season of experience under her belt, I think she's got at least a little bit of value worth considering this preseason.
Agree on all of it. However, she only scored a 26 in the practice match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that scare you off a little bit? Now, that does mean she's only priced at 18, so she's still technically value, but it's not going to be a lot of value.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I do think that there are going to be some teething issues with the Hawks across halfback, and there will be, I suppose, a degree of exposure where she's going to have to get used to the pace of play and whatnot again. I do feel like that practice game was incredibly low scoring, and the ball really, particularly in the first three quarters, I'm not sure how much that match you got to watch, but in the first three quarters, the ball lived on the far end of the ground, and the Hawks were not really possessing the ball too highly in their back half. I imagine as we get into the season and the Hawks face, you know, full outfits, because Sydney had a lot of players rested, that is not going to be the case. And I think that could pretty easily push up.
It's going to be tough to trust Topeka in a starting side. It's a name that we'll watch, and it's probably a line that we'll watch throughout the first 2 to 3 rounds of the season. I might even just, I'm going to call an audible here. Your number four player is Laura Elliott, who's also a defender. Let's bring her forward.
Let's bring her forward. Still be absolutely fourth,
but let's have a chat about Laura Elliott, because this is the other potential cheap halfback who might have a bit of a distribution role. What do you see there, particularly after the practice match? Let's have a chat about that. We'll talk about number three later.
Yeah. So Laura Elliott is one of my favorite defenders at the Hawks. I think she's incredibly reliable. She's one of our better kicks. I think she's a really good decision maker. And as we talked about at the top of the episode, there is a whole lot of kick-ins to be taken at the Hawks that are no longer being taken by the players that previously did. So the Hawks last season, to run through the numbers, had 99 kick-ins spread across 6 players. The lion's share was taken by Tilly Lucas-Rod, who had 52, and Emily Everest, who had 30. Now, neither of those two players are in the side this season. And then the next, we had Mackenzie Eardley with 8, Ainsley Kemp with 6, and I believe Laura Elliott actually had 2. So, like, the numbers really drop off, but there's no Ainsley Kemp this season either. Mackenzie Eardley is sort of floating across the field. We don't know where she's settling just yet. I think Laura Elliott is the next player off the rank, even with just 2 kick-ins last season. It's something that we have seen in the preseason so far. She's been taking about 50% so far, I would say, to the eye. That, you know, that means there's a good 88 kick-ins on the table for someone to take this year. You know, it's big numbers. So if Elliot takes
big numbers,
if she takes even half of those, you know, I think that's a very, very easy improvement. The other thing is that she's only 21 years old. She's gotten better every year she's played. Last season was probably her first playing every game as a best 21. She's only gotten, you know, big chunks here or there. And I think that gives you a lot of confidence coming into the following season, knowing that you're in the side. Her best game actually doesn't actually count towards her fantasy average last year. In the qualifying final loss that the Hawks had to North Melbourne, she had the 14 disposals and 8 marks on her way to a 62. So I think it's very possible, being only 341K, that we could see a couple good games early and she could make a quick bit of cash. And it's also a position I'm struggling with is D6 on my line. And Laura Elliott is absolutely in contention for it.
I think it goes without saying at this point, the additional positions that we now have, so D6, F6, and then at least one of the midfielder positions, because I think we've always had spots to fill in the midfield. We've already had excess players. Mm-hmm. One of your midfield spots, those are the ones we're struggling with at the moment. So if Laura Elliott can be an option who is not a rookie, who has experience, has capability, that would be great. Let's say she's closer to Laura Elliott than she is TLR. Laura Elliott was nearly bang on a 50 average last season. Laura Elliott prediction right now, above or below Everest's average by the time we reach the end of the fantasy season?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I do think Everest is a pretty exceptional and underrated player in the comp. I'm probably going to say like on or just below. It really depends on the share of kick-ins that she gets.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Yeah. And we saw her be a kick-dominant player in that practice match, but I would say that the overarching theme from Hawthorn was not particularly kick dominant, nor was it kick efficient. So fascinating to see what comes with a more traditional game that we might see to start the season. It would be another name where if she'd scored a 50 or 60, it would make my team that much easier to construct. I wouldn't have to be looking at paying up nearly as much at my D6 or running the risk of a cheaper rookie, say a Wakfa from West Coast. So we'll be fascinated to see who breaks out. Now, we talked about meters gained out. I'll just run through the list of meters gained average last year. First, Ainsley Kemp, gone. Second, Tilly Lucas-Rod, gone. Third, Eileen Gilroy, gone. Fourth is Jazz Fleming, who is playing. Emily Everest at 5 is gone. Lucy Wales is at 6. And she's your number 3 player. Let's talk about her.
Yeah.
Was one of the breakouts last year. A great ruck. Can she go to another level?
Absolutely. Lucy was on absolute fire last year. She improved her average by a good 20 points, which I think is what every season she's gone up. And she hit this purple patch between round 6 and 8 where she didn't go below 120. She was absolutely on fire. The only thing that stopped her was herself, really. At the end of the season, I don't know if everyone's heard about this.
Her own body.
Yeah, her appendix burst. And her pain tolerance is so incredibly high that she trained through it and nearly played against Port Adelaide until she was pulled out last minute of the warm-up and sent to hospital and had to have so many complicated surgeries. So, you know, thank goodness, really, that she's pulled through and has bounced back for this season. But from what we heard from Jenna Richardson, she's been training fully. And at this point, she's improved dramatically every single season. So obviously 97.9 is just an elite ruck average, but who is to say that's her ceiling? It could keep going. And she's currently sitting at criminally low ownership. It's just 3.9% of coaches. So for someone who's capable of matching it with Strom and Schultz, who are, you know, clearly the preferred choices, I think there's a third option there that needs to be considered.
I agree. Criminally underrated. 3% is too low. But you ask who can stop her. Jackie Dupuy, as a player to arrive inside a team that was already looking to have Mackenzie Eardley playing, as well as Jess Vukic, who is now being trialled as a bit of a tall utility, but came up as a ruck, alongside some other utilities who also have spent time in the ruck as juniors. Is it the question that Lucy's talent and skill could take her above 100? But the new ruck options that will all be in a best 21 team for Hawthorn being the reason she can't get up much higher?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question because there's a good chance that we end up having four players who got hitouts last season playing in the same best 21. I don't worry too much about the arrival of Dupuy. I think she's likely to take the forward 50 hitouts, but quite frankly, Mackenzie Early was already doing that last season, as was Ellie Simmons or Jess Vukic when they were playing up forward. So I don't think she's losing out there. And having her sit behind the ball as an intercept player, she's fantastic at that. So I'm really not too worried about that. And I think it's unlikely in defense that they risk Vukic when who's potential to, you know, be playing a lockdown role or Eardley when she's there as well. Just because those players are going to have, you know, a Dakota Davidson or an Indy Tahoe or someone more important to worry about, you know. So I would be surprised. I think her hit-out work is too important.
Yeah. I think that the concern is Eardley, particularly if she sits in defence. But I also think it's not so much that Jackie Dupuy will take the forward 50 hit-outs. I think that having someone who is a strong body who can control at the centre bounce gives the chance for Lucy Wales to be rested as probably one of your three most important players. Yep. If you are going to start winning finals, maybe there's a few more chop outs, a few more quiet fourth quarters. That's my only concern because I think she's an elite ruck. I'm asking some tough questions because she is expensive and we need to try and find some value.
No, absolutely.
Well, let's move away from the ruck line and let's do your last player here. We are going with a fascinating little forward option.
Yeah, I'm really glad that she's held on to the forward status because Hayley McLaughlin, pick number 5, here, is not going to be playing forward this season. As we heard from Jenna Richardson, she's been having a great preseason. which is fantastic given she struggled last season, really, to find her spot in the team. I think she was playing a sort of a half-forward role but was kind of behind a couple other bigger names and spent a fair bit of time on the bench and ended up being omitted just before the final series, before sort of working her way back into the team. But, yeah, in this preseason, she seems to have moved up into a role on the wing, which is where we saw her play against the Swans in the practice game. And she was probably one of, in a pretty dour fantasy scoring game, she was one of the impressive highlights. She had the 69 fantasy points from just 55% time on ground, from 14 disposals, 3 marks and 5 tackles. So I'm really, really liking what I see there. I think she's got a lot of talent. It's just sort of been establishing her role, you know, and where she fit into this side. So the question is, really, is she going to hold on to this role on the wing? Because the Hawks have two pretty prominent wing players already. I don't think Michaela Williamson is going to go anywhere because she's an absolute gun out on the outside there. And then Caitlin Ashmore is, I suppose, the big unknown of this season. Ashmore is 35 years old, and so I do think they're going to want McLaughlin to start developing on the wing just for that longevity plan for the Hawks. But Ashmore is, you know, she's gone from win to win. In that practice match, she moved onto the inside and was elite there. In previous seasons, we've seen her across half back, which she could play this year again. I can also see her moving onto the half forward line and just using her pace in a similar role there to sort of, you know, get the ball through the line. So she could really play in a lot of different roles. If she ends up on the wing, where she played most of last season, then McLaughlin's probably the third winger that we have. I think most teams do run a few. It just means it's probably going to limit the amount of time she gets on field and how much impact she can have there. So that's probably the biggest asterisk that I have on McLaughlin.
And I would also think that follows what we saw in the practice match, which is great scoring in low time on ground, which says that, you know, there's probably some questions about fitness and that's why she might end up as the third winger. But I don't think it's surprising that there will be some value coming from the host of forwards, cheap forwards at Hawthorn. She's not going to be my host special, but I think we could be talking very similarly about Neve Martin. Just given she is a more experienced player, has shown some flashes of skill, and I think that she could, you know, take a leap. I don't think that's Blaine Bogue, but I won't be shocked if she has a bit of a leap. I think there's value in Greta Bodie as well. I think McLaughlin. I think there's a whole host of options in the cheaper ranges of the Hawthorn forward line that I think you could pick. I kind of get why you picked McLaughlin. She wasn't really on my radar. The score popped in the practice match and I started looking into it a bit more. I was asking you questions saying like, where's she playing this year? Is she going to break out at some point? Like, what's the sitch?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love to talk about McLaughlin. I think she's really got some talent. And I feel like when it works really, really well. It's just finding that pace in the game and getting that role. So I think with a bit of continuity, that's going to help a lot as well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of pace, let's move across to host special. I have gone with Jasmine Fleming, who is priced somewhat surprisingly at 72. When you look at her average for last season, it's in the 60s, but that's because she had a pair of 40s in the finals. Last season was a big step backwards for Jazz Fleming, and it was, through no fault of her own, a clear bad knee injury that I think you and I both agree she was rushed back from in round one, came back in 3 weekends after what looked like it should have been a 6-week strain, and didn't really hit the same heights. Why would you pick her? Well, I don't think you pick her to start with. That's my first statement right up. Why are you looking at her though? Because I think, if you watch the AFLW, you know Jazz Fleming has all the potential in the world. She is comfortably the fastest player with ball in hand or around stoppage at Hawthorn. And I think that that is possibly one of the greater deficiencies in that Hawthorn midfield group. And so becomes a priority game plan operator for the Hawks and Dan Webster. And at this point, we have seen flashes of a ceiling. She has only had one score over 100 in her career so far, but I feel as though there is an elite scorer in there. She just has to get her body right and get the role consistency there. Jono, you've talked often about her needing to be, well, she is the best mid-forward at Hawthorn, and I don't think you're wrong. I just wonder if she's going to spend more time at half forward, where I think 70s and 80s is probably her ceiling, maybe a little bit higher with, you know, a high goal game, versus a full-time inside midfielder when, let's say, Bates doesn't take her game back up a level and, in fact, you know, regresses a step again. I wonder if their Hawthorn midfield's a step off the pace, and so Fleming has to become a full-time inside mid. I don't know the answer, but I think given where Fleming is priced, I think she's a fascinating player to watch early in the season if we do see a breakout, because I think a breakout is coming at some point.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I think she's one of those players, I wish the Hawks had about five of her, because she's just needed everywhere. Her ability to, you know, find players in the middle of congestion is incredible. I'm pretty sure she can't be tackled. She just finds a way to sort of weave through everyone. She's got clean hands. She can hit the scoreboard herself. I think she's a very exciting player and clearly suits the way that the AFLW is going. So it's just going to be a case of where is she needed the most.
Okay, here's a radical thought. It's not going to happen, but and it's ridiculous that this is the player I'm using as the example. Jazz Fleming should be playing the Zippy Fish role off halfback.
I mean, yeah, it would be very interesting. This is why we need so many.
Speed of ball movement is, particularly out of defence last year, was one of the concerns for Hawthorn, because once it got to a stoppage, Lucy Wales was such an important operator and Onya McDonough had just an elite season, taking marks, winning ground balls inside forward 50. The games that looked dour were ones where the ball movement was stodgy. Jazz Fleming stops that. She is the opposite of stodge. She is like someone squeezing lemon in your eyeball. Like, you are awake, very awake often when you've watched Jazz Fleming going around.
Yeah.
I think it's worthwhile. I don't think they'll try it, but I'd love to see it.
I think their hope is that Lavinia Cox, who honestly has the makings, she has very similar abilities with how she moves. I think they're hoping she develops into that and they don't have to take Fleming away from an area of the ground that she's already dominating. So I think that's the only reason we won't see that. But yeah, geez, if we could just clone Jazz Fleming and have her on half back in the middle and then up forward, I'd be a very happy man.
Yeah, well, I think that would be true of all 18 AFLW clubs, which is a great spot for us to move on. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We are right towards the end of our club preview series, but that does not mean that the content has stopped. You will still be able to get a full Substack preview article all about the Hawks over on our Substack, and it is not just about fantasy, it is all about the game plan. Quite a lot of the same stuff that we've been talking about, because unsurprisingly, Jono and I on an episode means it's a slightly longer one. But hopefully you have enjoyed listening to us today. You'll be hearing from the final few teams across the end of this week as we draw into the end of the preseason and very, very soon the first game of the AFLW season. So we hope you're all ready for that. You've been enjoying this series so far and you'll hear from us very soon. Cheers.
Thanks.